All right, so we'll get started here.
All right, so we are holding on the last line, the second to last line of Phaeza Medalis. We're in the middle of talking about, we started a discussion yesterday about the greatness of a person's wife and the seriousness of a person's wife passing away. It's like his whole world is like the whole world becomes dark for him, and there's no replacement for the wife of one's youth, and it's like the destruction of the Beis Mikdash, etc.
Even when he's divorced.
We started by saying that divorce is a very terrible thing. That's why we said the Chachamim didn't want to allow David to divorce one of his 18 wives. They preferred to give him a heter for Yichud. Okay, so that's what we're holding. Second line from the bottom, Chofeizim et al. Masni le Rav Yehuda le Rav Yitzchok b'rei. Rav Yehuda taught the following to Rav Yitzchok's son Rav Yitzchok. Einan moitze koras ruach ela me'ishter yishoyna. A person only finds real satisfaction from his first wife. Shenema, the prophet says, "Yehi mekarv chaboruch, may your fountain, your beginning, where you come from, be blessed. Usmach me'eshes ne'uracha, and be happy with the wife of your youth." Amalai, so Rabbi Yitzchak asked him, "Kegoin man, like give me an example of what it means to have nachas ruach from your wife." Amalai, so Rabbi Yehuda tells him, "Kein imcha, like for example, your mother. I have nachas from her. I have karv ruach from her."
He says about his own wife,
Rabbi Yitzchak's mother. So the question is, Amy, is that so? We actually find the other way around. The same Rabbi Yehuda, the Amora, one time taught the same son, Rabbi Yitzchak. He taught him a pasuk that goes from Tehelis, that says, I find more bitter than death the woman who is like traps and snares. And again, Rabbi Yitzchak asked him to go in man, like who's an example of that? Haramim is it's traps, like nets. Yeah. And then Rabbi Yitzchak asked him to go in man, like who, for example. Va'amalei, and again Rabbi Yehuda answered to go in imcha, like your mother. Now, how is he allowed to say such a thing? Isn't it lashon hara? So one idea is Chofetz Chaim talks about it naturally in a sefer on lashon hara. He says one possibility is everybody knew about it anyway, so in that case, it's not really Lashon Hara. Mm-hmm. Or, Fakir, he's not asking, give me an example of somebody who's like that. He's saying, to understand the pasuk, what kind of person, in other words, Rabbi Yitzchak knows that his mother is someone who's not easy to get along with, as we're going to see in a second. So Rabbi Yehuda is explaining to him, given that you know that fact, this is what the pasuk means. So it's not Lashon Hara against her, it's rather kind of confirming a fact he already knows. Okay, so anyway, the question is, first Rabbi Yehuda says, but if he knows, then it's not Lashon Hara, so he's not saying it in public, he's saying it to him. So the question is then, again, Rabbi Yehuda is first saying that he has nachas, that he's koras ruach from his wife, but now we're saying that she's marim avos, so which is it? The answer is both. Mitkas tekifa, she was a very tough kind of person, she would get angry easily, but iburim ma'abra b'mila, but she would also be ma'avar amidesel. She could calm down and be forgiven for her. So therefore, it's both. You could have nachas from her, but also when she's in one of her moods, then it could be. I'll do like a thousand kerkeiavos. You know, you have this coming Shabbos is kerkeiavos, right? That you have kosher lichus for kosher lerotzes, noyach lichus for noyach lerotzes, etc. Okay. All right. Here's another thing about a husband and wife. The Shmuel Ba'unya says in the name of Rab. The way it's phrased over here sounds a little un-PC, but we'll see in a second what it means. Isha Golem. A woman is a Golem. Now, what do we mean by Golem? We don't mean Golem as in the common meaning of it, like a stupid person. We mean a Golem as in an unfinished vessel. Rashi brings, for example, there's a word called Golem Clay Eitz, like unfinished wooden vessels. Where they haven't been, the work on them, they're not nigma melasa, so they're not makabel tumah yet, for example. So a woman is like an unfinished vessel. The ena kereses bris elo mishasa kli. She only makes a covenant, like she only really gets deeply emotionally involved with the one who makes her a keli, meaning the first time, the one she has relations with first. So ideally, it would be her husband, who then makes her able to have children. As the pasuk says, "Kibay alayach isayach." Hashem tzvakas shmai. As the pasuk says, "For your husband is the one who made you." Hashem tzvakas is his name. So we see, in other words, that the husband can be described as the one who makes his wife into the keli that she should be. The Chinuch, by the way, talked about in this connection. He says this might be the reason, he says, why the Torah tells a Kohen Gadol to davka marry a Besula. Given this that we're saying, you want that the Kohen Gadol's wife, more than anybody else's wife, should have that close relationship with him, that feeling of closeness with him and not with anybody else. And that way, their children, since we know that the relationship between the husband and the wife has a powerful effect on what their children are going to be like, the neshamas and the levushim for the neshamas that are brought down for their children, this makes sure that their children will be as maximally as possible the right kind.
Okay. So can you have that same relationship when you have 18 wives?
We're talking from the woman's perspective.
No,
she
no,
is
no.
only Kodesh Bris to the one who made her a Kaili. Each of those 18 wives, then, if David was her first one, then she would be Kodesh Bris with him. That's what we're saying.
Now, do you remember the story where someone's father used to ask the son to get something from the wife, and the wife used to always say,
yes, that's Rav Chiya, not Rav Chiya, that's Rav and his son Rav Chiya, yeah. So where his wife would always give him the opposite, and so Rav Chiya, the son, started telling her the opposite, and then she's doing the right, and then Rav told him, don't do that, because he still shouldn't tell an untruth, yeah. And a Hanami, yeah. Okay. Tana, we learned in a Braise. It was in Yavama. Tana, we learned in a Braise. Ein ish meis ela le'ish doivein ish meis ela le'bayla. A man, the one for whom he truly dies is his wife, meaning, of course, you know, he dies for his family and all, but the one who feels it most keenly is his wife, and vice versa. When a wife dies, the one who feels it the most keenly is her husband, and we see it from Sukkim. By the way, I mean, the Rogatchev points out that it also, what it means is, for example, you know, a person, take, for example, as far as the Dinim of Arayah, you know, and as far as, for example, in the next paragraph, we're going to learn about the dinim of psulei eders. Usually, the relationships that existed that make a person, for example, psulei eders on behalf of somebody else or whatever, those relationships still exist, or the relationships as far as arayas or whatever still exist, even after one of them dies. As opposed to a husband and wife, once one of them dies, and for example, the brothers-in-law, let's say, afterward, a man was married to a woman, her brother is also to testify on his behalf, and vice versa, but once his wife dies, he's allowed to, because then they're not related anymore. So in that sense, we're saying over here that a man really dies more for his wife than for everybody else, and vice versa, in the sense that there you have that the relationship is really broken up in a way that a blood relationship is not. Okay, Enish may say the Ishtay Shanema, as the Pasuk says, by Yomot Ali Melech Ish Nami. As the Pasuk says, Ali Melech, the husband of Nami died, so the fact that he has to identify him as the husband of Nami, where we know already from a couple of psukim earlier that he was her husband, teaches us that when he died, the main thing is that he was her husband, and she felt it most deeply. Then Isha Mesa El Baila, and similarly, when we say a wife primarily dies for her husband, Shanema, as Yaakov says, Ani Bevoyim Kadan, I, when I was coming back from Kadan Aram, Mesa Olai Rachel died on me. In other words, it fell on me most heavily. And remember, he's talking to Yosef, who's Rachel's son. But even so, what it did to Yaakov was even more than what it did to Yosef. All right. Back to now the Mishnah. So we learned in the Mishnah. Hello, we learned in the Mishnah rules about. We learned in the Mishnah rules about the deportment around a king that nobody is allowed. Ein roi noy tekolo. We said nobody is allowed to see him while he's getting his hair cut or undressed or in the bathhouse. So now we're going to talk about the king's haircut, and then we're going to talk about the haircuts of the Kohen Gadol as well, the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hay. The king takes a haircut every day. Kohen Gadol me'erev Shabbos every day. Well, obviously, except Shabbos and Yom Tov, but yeah. Kohen Gadol me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. A Kohen Gadol has to take a haircut every Friday. Kohen Hedyot echad l'shloshim yom. A Kohen Hedyot has to take one every 30 days. Why is that? Melech mistapa b'chol yom. A king takes a haircut every day. Shenema, the pasuk says, Melech b'yofya techzen einecha. The pasuk says you should see the king in his beauty. Your eyes should see the king in his beauty. So therefore, you want him to be as beautiful, as handsome as possible, and therefore you don't want to have to see him with any kind of growth of hair.
A king
we're talking about. Melech b'yofya techzen einecha. So therefore, every day. Then we said Kohen Gadol on Erev Shabbos. The Kohen Gadol takes a haircut once a week on Erev Shabbos. Why daft Erev Shabbos? Amr Shmuel Bar Nachman, Amr Rav Yochanan, Because every Shabbos, a new Mishmar comes to the Beis Mikdash. So like, you can't take a haircut on Shabbos, which is when the Mishmar actually changes over, but you want him to take it on Friday, and that way he'll look his best for the incoming Mishmar. When the incoming Mishmar, well, they arrive in Yerushalayim on Friday, and they first present themselves in the Beis Mikdash Shabbos afternoon, they'll see him with a fresh haircut from Erev Shabbos. So therefore, he'll look his best. Why did the Kohen Hadid have to cut his hair once in 30 days? Because the pasuk says, this pasuk is in Yechezkel. It's in Haftorah. This pasuk is part of Haftorah, Parshas Emor. It's describing the rules for the Kohenim. On the surface, it's describing the rules for the Kohenim who also love it, the third verse of Mikdash. But a number of the dinim that he said over there, we understand to apply even in earlier times. He's kind of restating them in other words, but they're not. Some of them, of course, I'm explaining, Taka, that, for example, the Ramah, the Yad Ramah on our Gemara, talks about that on at least some of the dinim that he talks about over there are talking about the Kohen Gadol, but on the other hand, here we're applying it to the Kohen Hedyot. So he says, yes, Wa'asid Lavoi, the Kohen Hedyot is going to be on the same level as the Kohen Gadol was during the earlier time. So therefore, the rules that apply to a Kohen Gadol then are going to apply to a Kohen Hedyot, lots of love. Most of the Mepharshim don't understand it that way. They say, okay, some of the Pesukim are talking about the Kohen Gadol, some of them are talking about the Kohen Hedyot.
Well, when you said the Mishmar?
Shabbos.
Oh, Shabbos?
Yeah. Shabbos morning, the Shabbos morning Avodah would be done by the old Mishmar. The Shabbos afternoon Avodah, the Talmud Rabbeinu Abayim, is done by the new Mishmar. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. How long are you working on Shabbos?
A week. Yeah. Okay. So the pasuk says, the pasuk says about the kohenim, their heads they should not shave, but they should also not let a wild growth of hair grow. Pera means like long growth of hair. They should trim their heads. We'll see at the bottom of the amud what kosim yichsimu means. It means a special kind of haircut, so we'll get to that. So therefore, since it says, they should not let a growth of hair. How much is that? The yalach, pera, pera, mi, nazir. We learn by Xeder Shava, the word pera from nazir, not really Xeder Shava, it's kind of Xeder Shava from Chumash to Nevi'im, but it's like a gilui mil to the Alma. It teaches us the meaning of the word pera. Ksiv ha'cha pera lo yishalech, who here is saying they shouldn't grow a pera, or ksiv ha'cha gado pera sa'roshah, by a nazir it says the word that he should grow the pera of his hair. Therefore, malahalim shloshim, afkan shloshim. Therefore, just like by a nazir, it's a minimum of 30 days, so also by the Kohen, for if he were to grow his hair 30 days, that would be called a pera. But Tananami and Taka, we learn in a Mishnah in Nazir, Stam Nazirus Shloshim Yom, that if a person makes a neder of Nazirus without specifying how long it is, it's 30 days. So the question is, V'hazim Manalon, Taka, where do we learn that a Nazir's term is 30 days, for which then we can use that to learn the Kohen? Amar Amasna, Dama Kro Kodesh Yiyah, because the Pasuk says about a Nazir, he shall be Kodesh. And the word Yiyah, Begimatria Tlotin, how about the word Yiyah? Yud and Hay, and Yud and Hay equals 30. So therefore, 30 days. Okay. Fine. However, Amalei, what? Kodesh Yiyah, so I mean 30 days. Hello? Okay. So the question is, Amalei Rapapa La'abaya, Amalei Lirubu Klau. Okay, but Rapapa says Ta'abaya. Okay, it says the word Pera. But on the other hand, it also says Lo Yishalechu. So maybe it means they shouldn't, maybe it means that even within 30 days, they're not allowed to grow their hair long. It's Nevi'im. You don't want to claw a crop necessarily. But how do we know? Maybe it means that even within 30 days, they're not allowed to. On the list, Abaya answers in Iksid, lo yishalchu pera. If the pasuk said they should not allow to grow a pera kidaka amris, then fine, it would be what you said it means. They should not allow their hair to grow until it reaches the shear of pera, which would mean they shouldn't allow it to grow even within 30 days, because if they were to leave it to grow for 30 days, it'll become a pera.
What's the
shear of pera? 30 days. But since the pasuk starts by saying the word pera, and then it adds lo yishalchu, it means pera lehebe, it means they can have a pera of 30 days, shaluchi lo yishalchu, but they can't let it grow any longer than that. So therefore, 30 days is taka the max. Any more than 30 is aser, but up to 30 is taka allah. Okay, so the question is, nowadays we know, because the pasuk says a pera lo yishalechu, which makes it sound like a pera, the word pera by itself would mean like they're allowed to have a pera, but lo yishalechu, they should not let it grow beyond that. So they can let it grow 30 days, but not more than that. That's why we said
29 days.
That's why we said they get a haircut once every 30 days. We learn it from that. But unless it's said lo yishalechu pera, it means they have to cut it before 30 days. By saying pera lo yishalechu means they have 30 days.
they say the illusion shall be fairer.
Then it would mean they have to cut it before it becomes a para.
Why?
Because then it would mean they shouldn't allow it to grow until it becomes a para.
Opera
lo yishalechu, it means a para they're allowed to have, but shaluch, but lo yishalechu, but to let it grow more than that, that no.
That's
a para 30 days.
Okay. And shall prepare
now, it would mean they have to let it, they have to stop it before it reaches 30 days. Yeah. Okay. Now, we know nowadays not necessarily koyanim cut their hair within every 30 days, but during Sfira especially. So, ihochi ha'idna nami. So the question is, and nowadays also, why are koyanim allowed to grow their hair more than 30 days? The answer is dumi yadiyai. It's no different than drinking wine. That same in Yechezkel over there, when he's describing the rules for koyanim, the next pasuk he says is they shouldn't drink wine. So my yayin, and the pasuk spells out over there that the yayin lo yishtu bevoya. It says they shouldn't drink wine when they're coming to the Beis Mikdash to serve. Therefore, my yayin bisman biyahu da'asa shalei bisman biyashari. Therefore, we'll see soon. Therefore, just like wine is only asur when they're going to be coming into the Beis Mikdash, shalei bisman biyashari, but if they're not going to be coming, then it's allowed. Afruidosh, the same way, growing their hair, bisman biyasur, shalei bisman biyashari. So the question is, v'yayin shalei bisman biyashari. So you're telling me then that a kohen is allowed to drink wine when he knows he's not going to be coming to the Beis Mikdash anytime soon? But we learn in a braisa, Rebbe Omer, Omer ani, koyanim asurim lishtas yayin la'olam. Rebbe says that the context of it there in the Sefer Tainis is, it talks about, it starts talking like this. If you have a koyan, nowadays after the Churban, now remember, the koyanim served in mishmaros, every mishmar worked in the Beis Mikdash for a week, and within each mishmar there were batei of. There were six or seven batei of. Each one would serve one day of the week. Macholikas were showing him whether there were six of them, and then on Shabbos all of them together would serve, or whether there were seven, and the seventh one would serve on Shabbos. Whatever it is. So let's say, for example, again, you know, so you'd have, let's say, the mishmar of Yehoyari, which is the first mishmar. Let's say, for example, their week to work in the Beis Mikdash might be, let's say, the first week of Nissan. So you would have then, on Sunday of that week, based off number one of Yehoyarib would serve, on Monday number two, on Tuesday number three, etc., until on Shabbos, Yehoyarib's turn is over, and Yedaya, the second Mishmar, takes over, and they start Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, etc. So now, the Gemara and Tainus there starts talking about, even after the Churban, if there's a Kohen who knows what Mishmar he's from, then he's not allowed to drink wine throughout that week. That he knows his mishma would be on duty. If he knows that he's from a particular base of, then he's only also the day of that particular week that his base of would be on duty. What happens, continues the Brais over there, if he doesn't know what mishma or base of, then he should be also to drink wine forever, because this week might be his week. And if you bona ham mikdash, and it might turn out it's his week. So now comes in Rebbe Omer. Omer ani koyanim asurim lishtas yayin la'olam. Rebbe says, Itaka would say that koyanim are also to drink wine forever. Avon ma'ese shetakanose kalkolose. But what can I do? Because he's fixed up by his kalkolo. What does that mean? Rashi says over here that it means the kilkol of the fact that the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, and therefore the order of the mishmaros is mixed up. So in other words, Rashi says
Rashi says what it means is
Rebbe is not concerned about the possibility that the Beis Mikdash may all of a sudden be suddenly built and suddenly you find you're drunk.
What?
We'll see. Wait. So the point is that therefore Kohen is allowed to drink wine even if he doesn't know what Mishmar and what Beis Av he's from. There's a different explanation, which is that Rambam understands Rebbe to be saying that Takanose, Kalkolose, he's fixed up by the Kalkola, namely, anyway, nowadays, nobody knows what, even if they know what Mishmar and Beis Av they're from, they don't know what week a particular Mishmar is going to serve in the Beis Mikdash. We're anyway going to have to wait, fine, the Beis Mikdash might be built immediately, but we're anyway going to have to wait until the Sanhedrin or whoever, Mashiach or whoever it is who's responsible for it, decides who's in what Mishmar and what week they're going to serve. So during that time, his wine can wear off.
Ve'omer Abaye, and Abaye says,
that's a different thing. Ve'omer Abaye, k'man shosi tani chamra, taka who the koyanim follow nowadays that they drink wine, to Rebbe, that follows Rebbe, because most koyanim don't know what mishmaros they're from. But according to the Rabbanon, it should be osur. So the question is, therefore, we see that even when it's not bizman biya, even when you're not going to expect to be coming into this mikdash, l'chura, you're not allowed to drink wine, according to the Rabban. So what are we saying that you are allowed to? And by the same logic that you're allowed to grow your hair for the same reason? That's just it. We see that Rebbe is giving a heter for it. The implication is because they say that it might be that Taka this week is your Mishmar's turn. So and they're concerned the Beis Hamikdash might be built any second, and then it'll turn. That's the point of Rebbe. That's the point of Rebbe. That's the point of the Rambam's understanding of Rebbe. We're talking according to the Chachamim. According to the Chachamim, they say the fact of the matter is this might be your Mishmar's turn, and this week might be your Mishmar's turn, and therefore you shouldn't be drinking wine. So therefore, in other words, the implication is that even if you're not expecting to go into the Beis Mikdash, it doesn't matter whether it's your Mishmar's turn or not. Apparently, the Rabbanon are saying it's also because regardless whether you're going to be going to the Beis Mikdash anytime soon or not. Yeah.
Even if a client knows which Mishmar he belongs to, he still has to know which Mishmar. Today, let's say I know I belong to this family.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
I don't even know what day that is.
So of course, that's the thing. That's why, according to Rebbe, that's what the Rambam understands Rebbe Takanote Kalkalose to mean. In other words, yes, even if you know what Mishmar you're from, you don't know what week they serve in the Mishmar. That's right.
And what's the reason of the Rabbanan?
The reason of the Rabbanan, on the face of it, is because they're not allowed to drink wine, even if they're not planning to go to the Mishmar anytime soon.
Why?
So that's what we have to figure out.
Let's figure it out.
Okay. The answer is Hossam Heiner Taimam Meheri Yibona Beis Mikdash, because the reason is that Rabbanon is because we expect the Beis Mikdash may be built at any moment. You need a Koyan who is suitable to do the Avodah, Veleka, and you're not going to have one. Ochinami, so by the same logic, but in a Koyan Aroy Lavoida, Veleka. So then, Lachura, then shouldn't the same thing apply to haircut? Lachura, you're going to need, you're going to need Koyanim who have their haircut. And you're not going to find one. So how are you allowed to go more than 30 days without a haircut? The answer is Hocha, after the Misapra of Ayo. Fine. With a haircut, big deal. It doesn't take that long. You'll get a haircut quickly and you'll go in and do the Avodah.
Still not immediate.
That's immediate enough for our purpose. It doesn't take
not
that long.
So
the question is, Hosam Nami Efshad Denayim Purtava Ayo. Wouldn't it be possible then, by the same logic of a Koyan has drunk wine, that he can sleep a little bit and sleep off his wine and then be able to go in? To Omer Rav Acha, as in fact we find that Rav Acha says, Derech Mil Vashena Kolshu Mefigin Asayayin, as we find that Rav Acha says, walking a distance of a mill or a little bit of sleep dissipates wine, so therefore all he needs is a few minutes of sleep. The answer is Velavit Man Allah. Don't you know that if there was said on that, Amr of Nachman, Amr of Avarbor, Lo Shanu, Allah Shashatta Kadeh Revius, that would only apply if he drank only exactly a Revius of wine. Ava Yosin, the Kadeh Revius, but if he drinks more than a Revius, Koshkin, the Derech Ter Dosa, then on the contrary, these things will make it even worse. Walking a mill will make him even more confused, Vashena Meshakauta, and sleep will make him even more drunk. So therefore,
up to a Revius you can drink.
That's the thing. The fact is, we don't see that. So that's the point. In other words, that we don't have any such distinction between less than a Revius and more than a Revius. So that's the point. In other words, that therefore you can't say that Koyanim should be allowed to drink because all they have to do is take a few minutes to sleep it off. Because if they drink more than a Revius, you're gonna need more than that amount of time. Which, by the way, there's the famous thing the Chafetz Chaim says on that. You see from that how suddenly we expect that any moment Mashiach can come and the Beis Mikdash can be rebuilt.
Yeah.
That we have to that technically the din ought to be that a Kohen shouldn't be able to drink wine because of that, and only because of Rebbe's point about Takanot Kalkalot, that it's going to take time to figure out who's in what Mishmar and which Mishmar serves when are they allowed. And the Rebbe added on that also, as the Rebbe talked about many times, that you see not only that every day but even every minute, because we're saying every year. Even all it would take is a few minutes a half hour, an hour, whatever, to sleep off more than a Revius of wine, and still we say that's not good enough.
That's going to the opinion of the Beis Hamikdash will come directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
No, even if we say the Pashas, even if we say that Mashiach is going to build
the Beis Hamikdash,
but because Makriv and Afam Kishen Bayis, you're allowed to bring Korbanos even if there's no Beis Hamikdash built yet, as long as you know where the place in the Mizbeach is.
He does.
When Mashiach comes, it'll be a matter of moments for him to say where the Mizbeach is supposed to be. Okay. So anyway, so the question. What brought us into this was discussing the question: why is it that Koyanim are allowed to go more than 30 days without a haircut? And we're saying for the same reasons they're allowed to drink wine, because yes, the Beis HaMikdash may be built any moment, but it's going to take time to figure out who's in what mishmer and whatever, and therefore that'll give them enough time to take a haircut or to sleep off the wine while that's being figured out. Rav Ashi gives a different answer. According to the Rabbanan, the Taka Koyan, who doesn't know what mishmer or Beis Avi's from, is never allowed to drink wine. Not according to Rebbe, who gave a heter Jachanot and Kavalot, but according to the Rabbanan, they don't make such a thing when it comes to haircuts. What's the difference? Rav Ashi, because the difference is, a Koyan who drinks wine, if he then does the Avodah, his Avodah is Mechola, his Avodah is Potter. Therefore, Gozer Behur Rabbanan, therefore the Rabbanan against Rebbe, want to make a Zera, don't allow a Kohen to drink wine, because if it were to happen, any moment that this message is going to be built, if we find out immediately which Mishmar this guy is in, he has to go do the Avodah. If he were to go without taking that nap first, then his Avodah would be possible. Shrui Rosh Le Mechali Avodah, as opposed to if he goes in with long hair, fine, he's not supposed to do it, but the Evid, it's not the Avodah is not possible. Well, Gozer Behur Rabbanan, therefore the Rabbanan didn't see a need to make a Zera on it. But he goes in with more than 30 days worth of hair, it's not the end of the world.
Okay.
Yeah. Question is, maybe the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah tells us later on in the Masechta, the Elushim Mishnah, the following people are Chayav Mitzvah B'nei Shemayim, Pruei Rosh or Shtriya Yayin. People, Koyanim, who go to do the Avodah with long hair or having drunk wine. So we have to ask, Bishlam Shtriya Yayin, we know that Koyanim went to drank are chayiv mitzvah b'nei shemayim, just because the pasuk says the yayin v'shecha al teish ta'atro v'necha, you and your sons should not drink wine or strong wine v'loy samusu, and you shouldn't die. El pruei rosh menolan. But after all, where would we know that that somebody who has long hair, that a kohen who has long hair, is chayiv mitzvah b'nei shemayim?
Only does there a hood would be possible.
No, that's the question. That's the question. El pruei rosh menolan. After all, how do we know that the pruei rosh are also chayiv? The reason must be the itkash shtriya yayin l'pruei rosh, because we have a hekesh in that pasuk in Yechezkel between drinking wine and having their hair long. Because the pasuk says, "See, the roshim lo yigalechu peralo yishalechu." Because the one pasuk says they should not shave their heads and they should not let their hair grow long. And the next pasuk says, "The yayin lo yishnevu goyim," they shouldn't drink wine. Therefore, from that we learn. In other words, we learn from that a hekesh mash shtriya yayin b'mitzah pruei rosh b'mitzah. That just like shtriya yayin or chayiv mitzvah b'nei shemayim, which we know from the pasuk in Parshas Shmini, so also pruei rosh has to be chayiv mitzvah b'nei shemayim. So now the question becomes umina. Well, then if we're using that hekesh, we should use that hekesh to learn also the concept mash shtriya yayin mechali avoda ach pruei rosh mechali avoda. Then by that logic. Shouldn't we say then that just like Shtriya Yayin are Mechalal the Ravoda, Pruei Rosh should also be Mechalal the Ravoda? So why, and we say that not. Why Taka not? Taka Akasha.
Rabbi Hekesh is a Hekesh.
He's saying that nowadays, because it'll take time to find out what Mishmar Koyan is in and when that Mishmar is supposed to serve, etc. Or according to Rashi, that it doesn't necessarily expect that this message is going to be built any particular moment, then therefore he allows Koyanim to drink wine. We use that heter, but we're asking on the more general thing. You're telling me that there's a difference. Shtriya Yayin is more serious because they'll be Mechal Lavoda, and Pruei Rosh is not. Question is why? If we learn from a hekesh that both Chayim and Yeshemayim, why should it make a difference as far as Mechal Lavoda? So here the Gemara leaves it with Akasha. In the Gemara, this is also in the Sefer Tainis, the Gemara gives the answer that no, the Hekesh was all we have, the Chachamim learned, it's part of Torah Shabbat, that the Hekesh was only meant for Mitzvah B'nei Shemayim, but not for the concept of Chilul Avodah. And actually, our Gemara has it later on in our Sugya, but it's in parenthesis, and Marshal takes it out, because he says Taka doesn't belong. The Gemara there in Tainis gives that answer right there after we ask the question. Here it doesn't, so evidently, when Ravina and Ravashi wrote all part of the Gemara, they considered that it was still an open question. Okay. Omelet Ravina and Ravashi. So Ravina asked Ravashi, let's ask a more general question. You're telling me we're learning these whole concepts of that a Kohen can't have his hair long, and then that long hair is 30 days, and that a Kohen who has long hair is Chayav Mitzvah B'nei Shemayim. We're learning it from Pesukim in Yechezkel. Yechezkel lived 900 years. Never mind that. The question is more historically. Yechezkel lived 900 years after Matan Torah. Hi, Adelai Ofi Yechezkel Man Avra. Where do we know these concepts from before Yechezkel came and said them in the Pesukim? So he answers back, according to your own Svara, let me ask you something similar. You can ask on this that Rav Chista says, The following din, we don't see it explicitly in the Torah of Moshe, Ad Shabbo Yechezkel Vilimdanu, until Yechezkel came along and taught us the following din, which is that Kol Ben Necho, he says like this, any Ben Necho, meaning Ben Necho, the simple meaning of Ben Necho means a foreigner, meaning a goy, but it can't mean that. The Koyan, obviously, a person who's serving in the business, is not going to be. It means a Koyan who's a Ben Necho, who's Nisnak Ramayt of Al Bishabash Maim, he's acting like a foreigner towards the Eidishter, yeah, namely, he served over the Zara. Erelev, when he has an uncircumcised heart, which is part of the same thing, in other words, he's a Meshumad, or the Erel Boser, or a Koyan who's an Oral of flesh. Meaning, it doesn't even have to mean that he deliberately doesn't want a bris milah. It can be mesu echad machmas milah, that he can't have a bris milah because it would be dangerous to his health. Nevertheless, lo yovel mikdashi, the show saying, the Chesed says such people are not allowed to come into my base mikdash to serve me. So yeah, you can ask a similar question. So where did we know this din from before Yechezkel came along? And we know it's taka a din that a kohen with oral was possible avodah. Ella, Gemara Gemirilo, you have to answer that they knew it as part of Torah Shema, as part of Halachal Meshmitzinai. But also Yechezkel v'Asmachakro, all Yechezkel did is he wrote it in a pasuk and thereby made it that now we have a pasuk to refer to. It's not part of Torah Shema anymore. Now it becomes part of Torah. Now it's something written down.
Can you name something that's only in Torah Shema to refresh our memory?
Yes, for example, Nisach HaMayim is a classic example of Halachal Meshmitzinai. Yeah. Most of the dinim of tefillin, for example, the halacha Moshe Mitzina, that has to be square, that has to be black, etc. Yeah? Yeah. Okay.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay. So the same thing. You can answer. You're asking, where do we know this concept of all these dinim about Kurdish? Same idea. It was all originally halacha Moshe Mitzina. But also Yechezkel, v'achmachakra, and Yechezkel came and then wrote a post. So when we learned the halacha, the misa, it was only as far as misa b'dei shemayim that it applies to both of them. Not as far as being mechal l'avoida, that only applies to shesuriyayin, it doesn't apply to purush. Okay. Fine. In the pasuk that we mentioned at the beginning of the sugya, we mentioned that the when we said a parallel yishalech, the pasuk had finished off, kosem yichsimu es rasheihem, they should trim their head. My kosem yichsimu es rasheihem. What does that expression mean? We learn in a brisa, it means tisperdus lulayonis. It means they have to get a haircut like a lulayonis haircut. My tisperdus lulayonis, so what does that mean? Amar b'hoda amar shmuel, tisperta yichidah. It means a unique kind of haircut. There's a different gear set that some of the Rishonim have, tisperta yiserta, like an extra special haircut. Well, okay. unique to the Koyanim, but actually that's the thing. This is another one of those ones where, on the surface, the din only applies to the Kohen Gadol. On the surface, the din doesn't apply to a Kohen Hedyot. So here's again where the Yad Ramah says, what Yechezkel is telling us is, well, Asad Lavoi, all the Kohenim are going to have that same din that the Kohen Gadol had in earlier times. But in earlier, before that, not necessarily did they have to have the special haircut. Okay, Hechidami, what is a special haircut? Amar Rav Ashi, Rosh Shalzeh, but that Ikra Shalzeh. It means the tip of one hair is next to the root of the other one. So the Rambam and the Ravid argue exactly what it means. The Rambam just says it means that all the hairs are exactly the same length. The Ravid argues on it and says it means like there's some kind of pattern to it, like waves or
the waves
or whatever. Shalom Rosh Rebbe, Ezer to Spurus Shal Kohen Gadol. So they one time asked Rebbe, what is the haircut of the Kohen Gadol? Amalahan, he says, Tzurum, it is Spurus Shal Ben Alasa. Go look at the haircut of Ben Alasa. Ben Alasa was Rebbe's son-in-law. And he spent a lot of money. He lived over 100 years after the Churban. So the secret of how to give such a haircut wasn't well known anymore. So he had to spend a huge amount of money to learn, or to either to for himself to learn how to do it, or for somebody to give him such a haircut, whatever it was. So therefore it became known as the haircut of Ben Alasa.
They had special talent.
Yeah. Tanya Rebbe Yomer, and in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe says, Lo yachinam pizza ben alasa es marisav. It wasn't for nothing that Ben Alasa spent a lot of money. Ela kadeh laharis lo tisperta shor kohen gadol. He had a good purpose with it, to show what the haircut of the kohen gadol looks like.
And we know what it is.
It's not like we have photos. So again, you have the Rambam and the Ravid, and then a couple of others who showing him arguing on the particulars. But
not the particulars, but
whatever it was.
It's in Harriet. The Shema would go up and down
the beard, yeah.
And so one of the days in the Gemara is that when they would trim his beard, it was the Shema would go up.
I don't know. I haven't died for a long time.
I think that would touch you.
Maybe, I don't know. Okay. Well,
yeah. There's one opinion.
Okay. Well,
the kind.
Okay, you know what? How about the Levium? The Levium could grow their hair however they want.
Oh, okay.
Hadron Allah Koin Gol. Okay. Let's save what we're going to learn in Hodeus for when we learn Hodeus around Pesach time. That's the same. Okay. Hadron Allah Koin Gol. Now we're going to get back to, again, this whole parak that we just did was kind of a digression from the main topic of our Masechta, because it was about the dinim of the king and the Kohen Gadol. Now we're going to get back to the dinim of the Sanhedrin, the dinim of Bote Dinim. So this parak is going to be about dinim moment.
So we're going to start yesterday's stuff.
There was enough to touch after a day, now that you mention it, I mean, the Alter Rebbe talks about, and in Shulchan Aruch, when we say that you shouldn't get a haircut on Thursday because then the hair will start regrowing on Shabbos, the Alter Rebbe asks, based on our Gemara, you're saying that it takes a couple of days for the hair to start growing, but we see from here, evidently, there must have been enough growth after a day for them to actually have something to cut. Okay, Akasha. But nevertheless, apparently there was enough. The difference is that one of the later Achronim talks about that to answer the Alter Rebbe's question, what it means is the growth becomes noticeable after 2 days or 3 days or whatever. But the fact is there is some small amount of growth after 1 day, and that was enough for them to come. Okay. Mishnah says dinim momenus v'shloisha. Now we learned back in the first paragraph that dinim momenus requires 3 dayanim. How are those 3 dayanim fixed? One Baal Din picks 1 Dayan, and the other one picks 1 Dayan, or Shnein, Burin Lainai Dechad. And the third one, and the two of them together pick out a third one, Divir Meir. Where's the Chachamim say? Shnei Dayan and Burin Lainai Dechad. Not the two litigants themselves pick the third Dayan, but rather the two Dayanim pick the third Dayan, for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara. Mishnah continues, Zeb Poisel Dayan Eshel Zeb, Zeb.
Yep.
This kind of thing, by the way, is called a Zabla based in. Zabla standing for Zeb Borer Lo Yechad. Zeb Borer Lo Yechad, which is what we said in the Mishnah, that each one picks 1 Dayan. Zeb Poisel Dayon Eshel Zeb, Zeb Poisel Dayon Eshel Zeb. Now, each one can declare the Dayan that the other one picked to be invalid. What does that mean? We'll see in the Gemara, but Divir Meir, so the Meir says, in other words, it seems on the surface like a Meir is saying they have unlimited power to do that. We'll see in the Gemara what he means. But the Chum say, when does he have such power? If he brings a Raya that one of these Dayanim is a relative of one of them, or Postal Ladin, for whatever reason, then he can invalidate them and demand that a new Dayan be picked. But if they were kosher to judge, or mumchen mipi beisdin, or if they're mumchen, as we learned in the first parak, where they have smicha ish mipi ish, and yochal apostel, and they can't passel them and say, I don't want to be in front of this guy.
Even if he has a proof that they're...
If they're apostel, if they're apostel, then yes, but not otherwise. Zeb apostel eid of shazeb, zeb apostel eid of shazeb, David Reb Meir. Reb Meir furthermore says that each one can passel the other one's edim. Again, we'll see in the Gemara what that means. It doesn't just mean he can't say, I don't want to accept your edim. That's just, we'll see. Divir Meir, v'chamim, and the Chum say similarly, Amosib is mancha, maybe alein gayesh and craven ibsulin. When does that apply if he brings proof that they're relatives of one side or the other, or that they're possible edus? Avalon, how you share them. But again, if they were kosher edim, any yachal opposed to them, then he doesn't have the ability to passel them. So, the Gemara starts up. My zebur lo echa v'zebur lo echa. What does it mean when we say Zeb Borer Lo Echa v'Zeb Borer Lo Echa? Each one picks one. Rashi explains that the point of the question is Zeb Borer Lo Echa makes it sound like each one of them picks a full complement of Dayanim. So Reuven picks 3 Dayanim, Shimon picks 3 other Dayanim, and then we said the three of them together, each one, Reuven says, I don't want to go in front of your Dayanim. Shimon says, I don't want to go in front of the ones that you, Reuven, pick. And therefore, they compromise and they find 3 other Dayanim that are mutually acceptable to both of them. So what does that mean? The plus a sagi. All you need is 3 Dayanim. Why do you need to go through all that? Tosfos says that's not the question. The question rather is that when the Mishnah starts off saying zebur layachad, zebur layachad, where it implies that each one is definitely going to pass all the other ones, why? Who says it has to be that way? You could have had that mutually to begin with. They agree to go in front of three dayanim. Why does the Mishnah make it sound as though you have to do it that way, where each one passes the other ones dayanim, and then they end up picking, a group by mutual agreement? So the answer is Tachikama, what the Mishnah means to say, Kisha Zeburla based in Echad. If Reuven says, I want to go to the based in, to this based in, and Shimon says, no, I refuse, I want to go to this based in, then in that case, since they have an impact, Shnei and Burra and Lahan Odecha, then between the two of them, they have to mutually agree on some of the based in. Neither one can force the other one to go in front of the based in that he said they have to be one that they both mutually agree to. The question is, after the loiva mati ma'akev, so you're telling me then that even the loiva has the ability to do that? If we have a malva and a loiva, for example, you're telling me that the loiva has the ability, the malva says, I want to go to this base din, and the loiva has the ability to say, no, I don't want to go to that base din, I demand to go to a different one. Why? Well, Amar Rav Elazar, lo yishanu ela malva, don't we find that Rav Elazar says later on in our perek that this is only talking about the malva has broad powers like that? There it's talking about a bit of a different context. There it's talking about, for example, one of the Bali Din says, let's have the Din Torah over here, and the other one says, let's go to the Beis Abad, to the higher base.
It's not about choosing.
No, but it's still the same concept. Ava loiva, koifinos, ava dun b'ira. But when it comes to a loiva, if the loiva says, I don't want to have the din tot over here, I'd rather have it like a greater basin, no, the malva can force him to have it here locally. So why should the loiva have the ability to say, I don't want to go to the basin? The answer is, just like we find further down on the Amud, that Rabbi Yochanan explains that a certain case of our Mishnah is talking about the Alkois in Surya. Alkois means literally means secular courts. It doesn't mean secular, it doesn't mean Goyish courts over here, it means Jewish courts, but it's in Surya. In Surya, the people weren't particularly expert in Dinim. It was between Eretz Yisrael and Babel. They didn't really have the what?
That's why they call them Alkois.
So therefore they're called Alkois in the sense that they weren't so bucky in the Dinim. So they were Jews, they were regular tribunals of the Dinim, but nevertheless, they weren't really expert enough in the Dinim that one of them should be able to say, that one of them should have the ability to say, we're going to have the Din Torah over here. The other one can protest. These guys don't really know the halacha. I don't accept their authority. So therefore, Hachanami Ba'al Korosh Shabbat Surya Shanim. So the same thing, when we say that each one has the ability to say, I don't want to go in front of your base, then it's talking about Korosh Shabbat Surya. But if it's an actual based in a mumchin, then not. Which is what Rabbi Lazar said, that since the local dayanim are mumchin, then you have to do it over there. Rapapa says you could even answer that the case in our Mishnah is talking about where we say that each one has their own favorite based in that they'd rather go in front of, where each one of them, the malva or the loiva, has an equal right to say, no, I want to go to a different one. When would that be talking about? Rapapa says, would be, for example, even if they're mumchin, kagan they dinner did a corner of Rav Chista. For example, what if you have two equally competent bate dinim in the same city? For example, the bate dinim of Rav Huna and Rav Chista. So therefore, if the malva, for example, wants to go to Rav Huna's base din, and the loiva instead wants to go to Rav Chista's base din, either one has the ability to say, I don't want to go to the one that you picked. I demand a different base. Because after all, even the loiva can say, become a tzrach nalach. Look, it's not like I'm being matriach you. You're saying you doubtful want to go to Rav Huna's base din. I say we could just as easily go to Rav Chista's base din. They're both locally right here. And they're both equally competent.
And therefore,
Yitaka would have that ability. And therefore, they'd have to mutually agree on some base din, either one of those two or some other base din.
Now, Rav Huna and Rav Chista were in which
city? They were in Surah, I think. But actually, Tosus points that.
So according to Rav Huna, even though they're mumchim, they can still
pick one over the other. Tosfos actually points out that Rav Chista wouldn't pass in halacha when Rav Huna was in the area.
Right.
Then so Tosfos says they weren't literally in the same city, but they were three parishes away. But still, that's not that far. That it should be much of a tirah.
Rav Chista was.
They were both in Surah or in the area. Rav Huna was the Rav Chista.
No, but Rav Chista wasn't Rosh Hashiva.
Not afterwards, after Rav Huna passed away.
Then he was second
Rosh Hashiva. Okay, the Gemara says, nah, fine, but let's see. So far what we're saying is, we're understanding the Mishnah to be saying that either one of the Bala Dinim can say, I don't want to go to your based din that you picked, I want a different based din. Okay, nah, let's see, the Mishnah says, wait, as long as they're both in the same city or the same area. Tnan, but let's see if that works with our Mishnah. The Mishnah continues, V'chamim shnei dayanin burden lehen oidecha. The Chachamim say that not the two baladinim pick the third one, but rather the compromise based in, but rather the two dayanim pick it. And if you're saying that what we mean is each one of the baladinim can refuse the other one based in, what do you mean? Based in, both the apostle who Oslo, Borolo, Bedin, Achrini. What are you saying? The first based in and the second, once each one has said, I refuse to be in front of that based in, those two, both the Jinnim, according to the Chacham, are going to go pick a third one. What would be the logic? No, what would be the logic? Yeah. And also, you have to ask, what do you mean? After all, Zeb Baru Layachad implies that Lahatchila should be that way. Each one should pick one. And according to what you're saying, it's only good the other. If one of them refuses to be by the other one's based in and vice versa, then yes. No. So that's not what I mean. Ela Hachakama. No. So never mind everything that we say. The Mishnah means something else. What the Mishnah means is as follows. Kish Zeb Baru Layachad, Zeb Baru Layachad. If we're going to make a Zabla based in, where Reuben is going to pick one Dayan, and Shimon is going to pick a different Dayan, towards the three that you need, then Shnein Berin Lahanaydachad, then Rav Meir says Reuben and Shimon mutually pick the third Dayan, and according to the Chachamim, the two Dayanim pick the third Dayan.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, Maishno Dabi.
Each one picks the first one,
and then the two of them together, or the two Dayanim pick.
What's that?
Reuben picks a Dayan that he figures will be favorable to him. Shimon does the same. And either Reuben and Shimon together pick the third Dayan, or the two Dayanim that they pick the third Dayan. So Maishno Davi Hachi, so what's the logic? Why should we do it that way? Why should we do it that way? Amri Marava Mishmeid Rabzera. So they said in Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Rabzera, Mitoch Shezeb Baru Ladayan Echad, Zeb Baru Ladayan Echad. Since each one is picking one Dayan who he figures that is going to be favorable to him, therefore, Shnein Berer and Lainachad, and the two of them together, or the two Dayanim together, pick the third Dayan. Yoytza Din Lamito, so the case comes out truthfully. Namely, Rashi says, in other words, this way, the one who ends up being judged to that he has to pay will think to himself, Taka is fair after all. I mean, I picked one Dayan. Whatever argument he could have brought in my favor, he would have done. So therefore he knows that there was somebody who was
not the judge's job to bring riots,
but still lahapach the chusi, like to find some kind of
how do you
admire
that
from
today?
What do you mean?
So
then what we do is, so each one is going to pick one Dayan. You're saying, what if Shimon does refuse to pick a Dayan altogether? Then Reuven can go, then never mind a Zabla Basin, then Reuven can go to an authorized Basin, a Basin of Bumchim, and have them send as
my. I think I believe that you've got a couple of
Yes. Yeah. A Zabla would be more if they're willing enough both to go to Basin,
right,
then a Zabla Basin.
If I call someone to Basin, he can say, oh, I want Zabla. Like, let's say I chose
Nowadays, nobody's mumchin in that sense because nobody has smicha ishmapiyish. But nevertheless, there are regular duly constituted batajinim. Each kehila has its own. There is some discussion. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a discussion. Some other contemporary achronim have a discussion how this applies nowadays. Do we say that kehila's based in is taka the based in of record, and therefore one can force the other one to go there, or not necessarily? Since you may have like in Brooklyn, you have many batajinim of the different kehilas over there. Amadvar is that takanath. You have all the time that there are cases involving businesses in Crown Heights, for example, that are brought to Bat Dinim in other parts of Brooklyn or even in other parts of the country or whatever. So, All right. Then we said that the two Dayanim together pick the third one. So the question is, name of Bidur of Yehuda, Amar Rav Kamithri. Should we say that the Meir and the Chachamim are arguing about the point that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav? The Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Eina Eidim Chosman al Ashtar, Elem Keni Yodin, Mi Chosim Imahen. Namely, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab that Edim should not sign on a shtar unless they know who's signing with them. Because what's going to happen, let's say one of the Edim might end up being an Ed postal, and then the whole Edus is postal, and then it's embarrassed, and it's embarrassment to them. So in other words, it sounds like they will have to know that the other one is a kosher Ed. So it sounds like the mayor less did Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab, Rabban Anisa, who did Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab. It sounds like the mayor doesn't agree with that, so therefore he doesn't care, for example, again, you're going to have Reuben has picked up Rachel. Has picked Rabbi Avraham. Shimon has picked Rabbi Yitzchak. Reuben and Shimon together are going to pick Rabbi Yaakov. What if it turns out Rabbi Yaakov is an apostle? He's an Amoret, he's an apostle of Din for whatever reason. It's a bizarre to Rabbi Avraham and Rabbi Yitzchak that they sat on a base with such a person. Apparently the mayor is not concerned about that. Whereas the Rabbanan are, and therefore the Rabbanan say, let Rabbi Avraham and Rabbi Yitzchak together pick the third guy, and in that way they'll know to pick somebody who's competent and somebody who's partial Eved. The answer is no. Look, the Kulam is the Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab. No, both Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan might agree with this concept when it comes to Edim. And Vidasa Dayonin Kulam Litzligidibin. And so therefore, even Rabbi Meir would agree that the Dayonim do have to weigh in. The Dayonim have to approve the choice of the two Balajin. Tipligi Das Balajin. The Machlokas is, no, not the Edim, the Dayonim. When we're picking the third Dayan, everybody would agree that you need the permission, you need the consent of the first two dayanim to pick a particular person as the third one. But the machlokas is pipligi das baladinim. The machlokas is, do we need the consent of the baladinim? Rav Meir sava das baladinim nami binim. Rav Meir says you need both. You need that Reuben and Shimon, the baladin, together agree on a third dayan who also has to be agreed to by the two dayanim who were already picked to make sure that they're not sitting together with a pulse. Whereas the Rabbanan would hold that you only need the das of the Dayanim, you do not need the das of the Baladinim. Therefore, in other words, they say the two Dayanim together can pick the third Dayan, even if Reuben and Shimon, the Baladinim themselves, don't agree to this third Dayan. Tough luck. We don't care.
It's not a thing that you need the approval of the litigant just for the first two.
Right.
Not for the third
one. Not for the third one. That's what we're saying. Okay, Gufa, getting back to what we just said, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab, Eina Edim Chosman al Ashtar Chol, we said that Edim shouldn't sign on Ashtar unless they know who they're signing with. Tani Nami Hochi, we learned similarly in Abaisa, Kachoy Nekiy Adas Shabi Yerushalayim Oisin. This is what the pure-minded people of Yerushalayim used to do. Loha Yechosman al Ashtar Elem Kedin Yodin Michosim Imahim. They wouldn't sign on Ashtar unless they know who's the other aide who's going to be signing on it, so that they know that he's a proper aide. They wouldn't sit in a din Torah unless they know who's sitting with them. Same idea. The dayanim, yeah. And they also would not sit down to a suda unless they know who are the fellow guests with them. For the same idea, Rashi says, in other words, so there would be a gnai for their Talmud Chacham. It would be a gnai for them to be sitting next to an amar. And actually, some of the Mephoshim talk about, this is when you know the famous story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, that the host kicked out Bar Kamsa, okay, because he hated him, but then Bar Kamsa blamed the Chachamim over there, they didn't stick up for him. Why is he blaming the Chachamim? What do they have to do with it? The Pashtus, because the Chachamim followed this thing, they wouldn't sit with somebody if they don't know what kind of caliber he is, so therefore the Taka didn't want to sit with him, with his Bar Kamsa. But that's what we're saying, Mesa B'Suda. They wouldn't sit down to a Suda unless they know who they're with. So therefore, when they see this Bar Kamsa coming in, who's a guy they don't want to have anything to do with, they Taka didn't mind when he's thrown out because they didn't want to sit with such a person. It's not a din. We're saying this is what the Nekiya Adas used to do. Doesn't mean they were wrong in letting the guy be embarrassed publicly. In Taka, the Gemara says over there in Gittin that look how strong the power of Busha is, that Bar Kamsa was able to accomplish what he accomplished to get the Bais HaMikdash destroyed. But they were within their rights, being Nekiya Adas, to say that they're not going to sit in the Suda if this guy's going to be here. But there would have been alternatives. They, for example, they could have left. I'll tell you, this reminds me actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing. I was reading. There's an interesting.
They could have left with them. They wouldn't have.
Whatever. We've had the first parak, for example, about everybody leaving because of the garlic or whatever. There was an interesting story I read I read a few days ago about Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. That one time he was sitting on a bus in Yerushalayim, and a lady gets on who's in a dress not particularly sneezy and sat down next to him. So he gets off at the next stop and waits for the next bus. So they ask him afterwards how come. He says, because what are the alternatives? Should I get up and sit in another seat? It would embarrass her. I don't want to sit next to her. Should I ask her to move? It's not nice either. The only thing I can do is get off.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So, next time you didn't sit. A lot of, I have to go up on the train and someone sits and they feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, okay, get up. But if the person's enough, she gets up and says, listen, come on.
Yeah, whatever. So So there's always alternatives. In other words, they didn't have to sit with that cancer, but they also didn't have to watch when he's being embarrassed.
Can we advise today that Diane, can you refuse to sit
on a base? If you don't know who you're sitting with, absolutely. If you don't know that the other. No, a suddha is a different thing. I mean, it's fine. You again, do it in a way that's not going to embarrass the other people. But yes, the Tamil Chacham is it's brought in halacha. Tamil Chacham back has no business sitting at a suddha together with Amei Aretz.
You're not supposed to sit down with people talking about football.
I mean, there's a question: do we have nowadays people of the caliber of a Tamil Chacham like that? That's a different question. But whatever. Yeah, you know. There are places where there are gatherings that it's appropriate to be at, and gatherings that it's not appropriate to be at. You know, sometimes the Taka do need to speak up. But yeah, as far as Dayanim, yeah, definitely a Dayan shouldn't be sitting on a base din if he knows that the caliber of the other people on the base din is not proper. I saw in this connection also a verse from the Vilna Gaon when the Shvatim are listed in Parashas Bamidbar, when it lists how they were camped around the Mishkan. Every one of them says the first Shevet from that side, U Masei this, U Masei that. So the three Shvatim together, except by Yisachar and Zvolun, it says Yehuda, U Masei Yisachar, and then just Masei Zvolun. Why? He said, because Zvulun were the merchants. Yisachar was the Shemitah Chachamim. They don't belong so together. That's very nice. He's paying. That's very nice. He's paying. Taka has his chut. But there still should be a certain separation.
No.
It's a vote from the Vilna Gaon. I mean, that therefore the Vav is left out of there to show that there still has to be a certain separation between Yisachar and Zvulun. Zvulun is paying for Yisachar, and he has a tremendous chut in that, and he shares in Yisachar's chut. And Taka from Zvulun, later on, we find it's safer shaped him. There were Tamar Chachamim from them. But so long as their primary thing is their merchants rather than Tamar Chachamim, then there has to be a certain, they're next to each other on that side of the Mishkan, but there needs to be, you need to be aware that there's supposed to be a certain mental separation.
That's what the
You can say that.
I think that's